All right, so welcome everyone. So we're continuing this exploration of Dharma in daily life. Last month we talked about communication, and now we're moving into the topic of boundaries. Boundaries. You know, are boundaries good? Are they bad? You know, what about in our spiritual life? How do those show up? And in one way, our spiritual practice is much about releasing that sense of separation and isolation. So you could say it's almost going contrary to the movement of boundaries, just becoming more boundless, you know, going back into this quality of formlessness. And yet boundaries are also, the reason I initially wanted to talk about that is about boundaries as a topic was not so much about this aspect of things becoming less separate, which we'll maybe we'll talk about in 2 weeks, but much more about the quality of healthy boundaries. Because there's a tendency I noticed in, you know, spiritual people in general to do a little bit of it's kind of a spiritual bypassing around boundaries, that they feel, okay, I'm a spiritual person, so I shouldn't say no to somebody. I should be accommodating and easygoing and peaceful all the time. And yet they're struggling inside internally because that's not really that's their actual internal experience. It's much more something they've adopted and tried to put on this show to fit their own personality or their idea of what's that personality of the spiritual person. So tonight I want to talk about healthy and appropriate boundaries in relationship to our Dharma practice and also to our lives. Because boundaries, when they're healthy and appropriate, really they become very essential to our well-being, but also to our spiritual practice, to our spiritual growth. Now, this, of course, boundaries cross over into this world of therapy and psychological work, because so much of our understanding of boundaries, the way we show up with them, we learned in childhood, we learned in our history of how we were raised and the dynamics, sometimes very painful dynamics. And the Dharma practice is really learning to free up this present moment from our conditioning, from our history. And sometimes that conditioning is very sticky, it's very dense, it's very charged. And so Dharma practice sometimes isn't alone by itself enough to resolve some of these, to work through some of these issues. And that's where therapy can be so beneficial. You know, if your boundaries were repeatedly violated or not respected as a child, or just they weren't very clear what, you know, where you begin and where your parents end, it's going to show up as an adult. It's going to show up in how you interact with others in your workplace. And it's going to show up in how we practice our Dharma, our spirituality. And so much of therapy is learning to recover and heal those boundaries, to learn to have those intact. And the Dharma practice also can teach us a different way of approaching it. You know, so again, they're both very important, and you know, they all both have their place. So boundaries, I'm going to speak of them in terms of how it really depends on us having a healthy sense of who we are, of a sense of wholeness, of integrity. You know, what does that actually feel like? And not as a concept, but actually really deep down we know, okay, this is a sense of wholeness. This is a sense of integrity within ourselves and also within another person. And so often we don't have that. That's not so clear what that actually looks like, what that feels like. So there's a sense of integrity, a sense of wholeness, of intactness. And when we have a strong sense of that, we can really hold that in an unwavering way. Then the boundaries just naturally fall into place. They naturally flow from that. A sense of knowing, okay, where I start and end and where another person starts and end. Again, we can go into the sense of the formless and empty when those senses of isolation fall away. But again, we'll explore that maybe in a couple weeks. I want to talk much more about the very practical reality that there's this relative reality of self and other. There's self and other, and there's a place that we meet. And where is that meeting? Is it in a way that's appropriate, respectful, honoring of both people? And there's a physical aspect, of course. There's a mental, there's an emotional. There's also an energetic quality, you know, that we can open to someone's energy. You know, that doesn't have to be an esoteric thing. We can just, you know, someone comes into the room is really charged, really angry, very sad. We resonate with that. We register that in some way. Something about us knows, okay, there's something going on in this person. Even though they haven't said anything to us, even though there's no history, we just know this. And so how do we meet that in a way that is appropriate, that's beneficial for both them and for us? So just have a visual for a moment. Imagine that you're sitting here and there's like a sphere all the way around. Okay. Don't you have to make anything special of it, but just imagine a circle, a sphere, I should say, in all directions. And let's say that's the sense of having a healthy quality of boundaries. Sometimes it's more rigid. Sometimes it's more soft. It just kind of depends on what's going on. Now, for most of us, we start to notice that that's not a perfect sphere. There may be a hunk missing in this area. And maybe this area is really shifted out. It's bulging out in this direction. And that's often how we learn about boundaries, is how we navigate our upbringing, how we navigate the experiences in our lives, our traumas, our difficulties, our successes. All these things, all these conditionings shape how that sphere shows up. Right? And we come into practice and we have these moments of touching deep peace and a sense of the divine and a sense of deep emptiness. And we can feel that those lack, those holes in our boundary field, if you will, we think we can kind of, you know, get past that, kind of like the get out of jail free or chutes and ladders. You jump over that difficulty, right? But yet when we start to bring our insights into our practice, those very gaps in our boundaries, those very wounding show up. And we say, what's my practice? It's not working. You know, I feel so good when I'm on retreat or when I'm practicing by myself. But once I talk to that one person, it just goes out the window, right? So that's the spiritual bypassing. And that's also paradoxically the invitation to really test and integrate our insights. They're not meant to be something we just kind of internally think about and hold. It's really meant to transform the very way we are in all aspects of our lives, in all relationships with people we hold dear, people we hold at a distance, all these qualities. This is all part of learning how our practice shows up in daily life. The whole point of this year is Dharma in daily life. So most of us don't really have a clear sense of what that wholeness really looks like, what that really feels like. Because again, those kind of dents, those gaps, those outpooching, those bulges, just feel like that's how we are in the world. It's how we should be. I remember years ago when I was doing my own therapy work, I took a workshop on boundaries over a weekend period. And the therapist had this series of lovely exercises, but there's one that I really appreciated because it gave a real visceral sense of boundaries. So I'll just describe it for you. And unfortunately, I think it's not quite what we do in Dharma worlds, but you might, if you have someone you might practice it with, it might be insightful. So you're simply sitting across from another person, you know, on the ground or in a chair. And what you do is like, you know, the game patty cake. You put your hands out, you touch their hands, and you come back, you know, to your body, going back and forth. But as you do that, you say, okay, this is me touching yourself. This is you touching their hands. And you just kind of do that and feel how there's that simple space, equal space. Okay, got a sense of that? Seems pretty benign, pretty easy. Okay, now imagine that you're doing it with someone like your mother, your father, your sister who always, you know, berates you as a bully, your boss, your employee, someone you have trouble with in boundaries. and you role play and say, okay, I'm going to be myself. You be my boss. And I want you to show you doing, you're telling the other person how to mimic that. So let's say it's someone who has really overly intrusive boundaries. So say, this is me. And instead of being able to have your space, they're intruding upon your space. And you feel that, what that feels like. Oh, wow. I don't have any space here. And you go back and forth a little bit. And then maybe you switch sides. So you become that other person. You feel like, what does it feel like to go into another person's space? And you start to get a visceral sense of that, a somatic sense of where those boundaries actually feel like. And it was so helpful to say, okay, I'm going to do it with my image of my mother, my father, my brothers, my spouse, partner, anybody that I struggle with. And you start to get a real sense, oh yeah. And sometimes it's interesting when the other person's neutral and just doing the neutral quality. You bring your hands out because you're not used to putting your boundaries out. And you can feel the gap. You feel things falling away. Or you try to push too far and they're just going back to what's appropriate. So by doing this, I started to get a much better sense of where my own dents were and where my own bulges were in that sense of boundary, that metaphorical sphere. There's a physical, emotional, mental, energetic quality to that. So the reason I mention this, and I think it's so helpful as Dharma practitioners, is sometimes we skip over the fact that our boundaries are not intact. Our boundaries are sometimes shattered. Sometimes they're distorted. Sometimes they're distorted being too much out there. Sometimes too little in here. And learning to recognize that, to see that, then we can start to understand how we can bring our practice into life. Because I often get questions, you know, people are trying to solve some difficult thing in their lives. They're trying to use a Dharma gate to understand it. And sometimes it's just, they have to learn to say no. They have to learn to say, okay, that's enough, or draw a line. Or sometimes it's the fact of that they need to hold their own integrity and not be so pushy, not to be so intrusive to another person. Because it's much about, you know, how other people are receiving you, but also how you receive someone else, how you relate to another person. Because sometimes we have these tender areas that we decide to protect by pushing out our boundaries like a shield that we're pushing into someone else. This is, you know, part of what we learn, how to get through our world, how we make sense of ourselves and our surroundings, often when we're young. And also as adults, you know, those experiences we go through. And so learning to free up the conditioning so the moment can be fresh, can be alive, can be free of our suffering. Really freeing others from our own conditioning. So boundaries and that sense of wholeness, that sense of integrity. And we start to define boundaries in this way. It starts to give a whole different understanding of the precepts, of how we can hold the precepts as this way of exploring boundaries, of exploring that sense of wholeness, and not only for ourselves, but importantly for someone else. Because when I start to get a much more internal sense of that wholeness and integrity, I can start to feel much more clearly when I start to, when someone's maybe pushing against my own boundaries, but equally importantly, how I start to push on someone else's. If you come against someone else whose boundary is very soft or very weak in that area, to realize, oh, they're not meeting that, like, this is me, this is you, there's not that meeting. And the precepts, as a boundary expression, you have that sense of integrity. So even though that person doesn't seem to put up a boundary, I know this is a violation of them. This is causing them harm. You know, so you basically hold their boundary even though they may not be. So non-killing, non-harm. You start to, again, see that sense of wholeness in oneself. You start to really value that. Because there's a sense of being upright, a sense of integrity, a sense of, okay, I can relax in my own skin. And then you start to value that for yourself, and you naturally start to value it for other people. you want other people to also feel that sense of safety, that sense of non-threat, of non-harm. And so as you hold that quality of that, is a whole different way of relating to the precepts. Not to I should or shouldn't, or I'm a sinner, or I'm a non-sinner, but that sense of holding that quality of integrity, that quality of boundaries. Same thing with abstaining from stealing. You know, that sense of, okay, here's my possessions, here's what I own. And, you know, I remember going on retreats for the first time and hearing us all take the precepts and realizing, wow, I don't have to worry about someone taking my stuff, taking my possessions. Like there's a way that I could feel the whole group growing together. And often when I lead the precepts, when I teach a retreat, you can almost feel like the room is kind of diffuse and it's becoming, the container becomes more solid, becomes more together. Everyone's becoming aligned around that. And this is that sense of wholeness, of integrity that we're holding for each other, of respect, of mutual respect. Abstaining from sexual harm. So this one is, there's so many boundary violations, boundary crossing, assaults, violence, that, you know, we don't have to go very far to find someone who's experienced that. I don't know, what is it? I don't know what the statistics are, but it's like 20-30% of people will experience, especially women will experience some form of sexual assault in their lives. You know, maybe the statistics are even higher. And I think for men, it's maybe 20% or something like that. And so you have that sense of violation, and you start to really have that integrity of your own sexual health, your own physical boundaries. And you, again, you hold it in a very different way when you come from that place of integrity. And so when I say integrity, I'm really talking about that intactness of that what's whole, a wholeness. And you meet someone who's, you know, has, for various reasons, doesn't have the wholeness and has that a big gap there. Unfortunately, sexuality is often where we have those big gaps. We've learned to try to get love through our sexuality, to try to get acceptance through that, even at the cost of our own well-being. So you sense that, you feel that. And there's that meeting, which is much more respectful, much more appropriate. Really, this is a much deeper understanding of true consent. Understanding power differential. When someone is in a greater place of power, whether they're a teacher or authority or a doctor, a therapist, a politician, you know, whatever it might be, an employer, there's never that balance. There's never that balance of energy. Of powers, and their boundary violations are so easy to happen because we're trained to really give up our power to authority. This is often the cause of so many violations of boundaries that happen in spiritual communities, in any kind of community. So I think that's always an important thing to understand and sense. Okay, how is the leadership holding their own integrity, their own sense of wholeness, and more importantly, how are they holding yours? Are they asking you to compromise, to take care of them in a way that's unhealthy? Abstaining from lying. We talked about truth as part of why speech and communication. And truth is, you can say that's an expression of what is whole. Something that's whole is also, by almost definition, also true. So there's a truthfulness, a sense of alignment with that. And when we distort that alignment, distort what's true and offer a lie deliberately, we're really fracturing that quality of wholeness. As the Buddha said to his son Rahula, someone who tells a deliberate lie, there's nothing they're not capable of doing. You can start to get a sense of how that is very possible. And the fifth precept, to abstaining from intoxication. You know, for those of us who, you know, have had times of being intoxicated, or maybe still do, you realize in the midst of that, boundaries become very hard to hold. It's very hard to be heedful, to watch all these other precepts. You lose that quality of self-reflection, the self-control. Impulses take over for both your own harm and others. So boundaries and the precepts, you can see how they really go well together. Another thing about boundaries is they have the quality of creating structure and container. Okay, so what I mean by that is that, we, like here in the room, here in the physical room and the Zoom room, there's a certain container or structure that we've set up that, we start with a meditation, we start at 7, do the meditation, have a break, do a talk, have questions. And there's a certain container of respect, a certain container of how we communicate with each other. Now, for some of you, that may feel it's lopsided, like the teacher's doing all the talking. So if the container doesn't quite fit, that's important to look at too. But if it does fit, there's a sense of, okay, we're all kind of relax into that, structure. Because if it does feel appropriate, if it does feel like it's comfortable, then we kind of, okay, I know this is how I can expect other people to behave. I can relax, the need to have a strong boundaries, because everyone's kind of holding that. Going back to the retreat, when we offer the precepts and we all take that, there's a sense of the container, what holds the retreat, what holds everyone in there, holds their actions, becomes stronger. And within that, we can all relax. We can all feel that sense of ease, of settling down. But if the structure is not clear, if it's more random, our boundaries are constantly feeling buffeted. We're not sure of how strong they have to be. So just reflecting for a moment on structure and container and boundaries and the sense of safety and sense of, okay, I can relax into this moment. Now, how do we learn that growing up? Was the structure kind of calm and appropriate? Everybody seemed to follow along and it seemed to make sense to everybody? Or was it more chaotic? Or was it random? Was it have a quality being absence? So the kids had to be like a Lord of the Flies, kind of governing themselves in this very chaotic way. Was it overly rigid? Was it oppressive? Was it violent? And how was it enforced? Was it enforced with kindness, with compassion, with clarity, or with violence? Manipulation, or just ignore. Okay, that's okay if you're not going to follow that. Because it's important to realize something being overly rigid is as devastating as being overly marshmallowy, as you will, that lack of boundaries. It's going to show up in our lives. It's going to just show up. So part of the reason for talking about this psychological piece is, one, to point that may need some attention. But also to bring it to consciousness. Because again, we learned it so early, we don't realize I'm still operating those programs. I'm still operating on those assumptions that made sense. The strategy I came up with when I was growing up, but maybe they don't make sense right now. Maybe they don't make sense in my current life, my current experience. And how do we rebel or push up against structure? How do we meet that? Because sometimes we need that. We don't have that structure growing up. We need to have something to push against. Or maybe it's too rigid and we can't push against it in a safe way. And this is a developmental piece of human beings. Children have to go through and saying no. They have to say, no, I don't want to do that. As a 2-year-old, as a teenager, this is healthy. This is important. For them to have something to push against. Yeah, so if that's a big, I really don't like structure, I don't like boundaries, you may reflect, maybe that's part of how I was raised. I never got a chance to develop that, to learn that. So all this that we've been talking about, again, I'm kind of really weaving in between psychological and Dharma work. Now to kind of bring it more into the Dharma side of things. All of the stuff we've been talking about creates how we show up in the moment. You know, creates how we are in the moment. These habits around boundaries, our comfort zone around boundaries. Doesn't mean we actually feel comfortable while we're having those boundaries. It's just what we are, our default we go to. It's our set point around boundaries. Our relationship to boundaries, this often shows the underpinnings of how we construct the sense of me, the sense of I, that sense of identity. And that might look like the absence of boundaries in some areas, the weakness in some areas. It might look like being too rigid and too strong, too unyielding in other areas. Yeah, so this is not judging it, not saying you have to fix it, but just to become aware of it, to bring that quality of awareness and knowing to that in itself. Really, in some ways, meeting it with a complete non-judgmental attention and yet a kind, compassionate attention allows that to start to heal itself. Because our boundaries are really personal. They're very a personal way that how my character, my personality, the sense of who I am really allows me to have boundaries in some areas and not in other areas. Now, there's some areas that I just have so much trouble saying no to a particular category of person, you know, a certain authority issue. I don't want to threaten them being upset. By other people, it's much easier to, or maybe there's a frustration about not finding that meeting of another person's boundary. Really, that sense of me, that sense of self is really backfilled behind our relationship to boundaries. Okay, what I mean by that is that we have a boundary, you know, or a lack of boundary. And really what's driving that, again, until we become healthy and appropriate with our boundaries, is our history, our memories, our experiences. Thinking back to last year and all the exploration around dependent origination, you're seeing how this, our sankharas, the volitional impulses, the choices we make, the idea, you know, I choose to do this or that, mental, physical, verbal. Our very way we perceive things, the very way we label things. Okay, I know what that is. I know what to do with it. I like this. I don't like that. The tendency for Vedana to show up in a certain quality, perception of pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. You know, the potential energy that's stored in us that launches us into craving, into clinging, into becoming. All that we talked about last year, that shows up in our relationship to boundaries. Because its boundaries have to be that point of contact. Contact with another person, with another, could be a group of people. There's that sense of contact that happens. And our history of boundaries show really influence how we perceive that moment of contact and that what we do after that contact. It all maintains and supports this solid sense of an isolated self. An isolated self. And so this is where the understanding of the Dharma comes in. That we start to feel that, okay, notice that I always have trouble when an authority figure wants me to do something I don't want to do. I can't really say no to them. Or maybe the opposite. Every time someone asks me who's an authority, I just automatically say no before even thinking about it. I mean, whatever you might fall into. Start to notice where your habits are and realize that that habit is keeping you really established. It's reinforcing the sense of you. So practicing by going opposite of your habits to the point it feels a little uncomfortable. It's like, okay, I'm going to say no to this authority figure. I can feel all the fear and discomfort about it. Okay, no, I'm not going to go volunteer those extra times, or I'm not going to do that extra work, or I'm not going to do that. You can say it in a respectful way, in a kind way, but you can also say it in a powerful, firm way, in a integritous way. And the more you do that, what's happening is you're taking that dent and you're starting to push it out. You're trying to push it out so it's more balanced. Or maybe your boundaries tend to really go out and you just try to really, you be overly blaming others for your experience, blaming others for what they've done to you. You start to, okay, I'm going to hold my own experience back to me. I'm going to feel my own responsibility for my emotions, for my thoughts, for my rage, my fear. That's bringing that outpooching, that bulge, and bringing it back in. So you start to make that circle more and more whole. I think sometimes we, especially if we're really interested in the sense of anatta, of non-self, we forget the fact that we need to have a healthy sense of self before we can understand non-self. We can have a taste of non-self, but eventually we have to really have that healthy sense of self. Otherwise, we're going to tend to keep reinforcing it. There's going to come out in these kind of crossways. The same thing with boundaries. We have to learn to have a healthy sense of boundaries so then we can start to actually release that separation. And it rises when it's needed and it falls away when it's not. I think that's one of my favorite ways of holding the spiritual practice is this quality of, let's see, how should I say it? It's almost like you're rising up to meet the moment how it is, and you're letting yourself rise up, versus you're kind of putting on your suit of armor and you're going out into the world, always biased for a fight. We're always biased to be a victim or biased for whatever way. You learn to be much more spontaneous. Your meeting life has its unfolded. Okay, so boundaries, you know, we often have to learn that. We come in with a quality of, my boundaries can only be the certain way. But eventually we start to see that, okay, I can have a relaxed quality about myself when I'm relating to another person. And if the boundaries need to rise up, they do. And I can state them clearly, compassionately, sometimes more strongly, sometimes softly, depending what's needed. And when they're not needed, I can let them go. So I'm available to what's happening, what's arising. So let's talk a little bit more about working with boundaries and kind of moving into some more practical things for the last little bit here. So one thing that often happens is that we start to open spiritually. And we start to find that we're so sensitive to life. We feel so affected by things. It feels like it's too much to hold. Right? We become more sensitive to our own experience if we naturally find ourselves becoming more and more empathetic, more affected by others' people's experience. And so it feels like it's too much to hold. And especially as we open and deepen in our practice. And so many of us at that point, we have to learn to kind of come back to that sense of wholeness, that sense of, okay, almost re-establishing those boundaries that we've stripped away. Sometimes that evolves naturally as practice deepens. Sometimes it's just part of, you know, we were never taught good boundaries as a child. So you never had that quality. So I'm going to say a few things which may seem a little, strange. That's quite an interesting preface there. But it's more of using our minds and our intention to kind of direct our energy in a certain way. Okay, so there's kind of analogies or pictures that you can use, visualizations, if you will. So what I heard from this one teacher is that sense of imagining when you're kind of really stuck to someone else, you feel that sense of being overly enmeshed in them or overly concerned by them. You can almost imagine like there's a tether going from you to this other person, like a cord, right? Sometimes it's a cord that's pulling you, sometimes it's pushing you. You just feel that stickiness. And his suggestion was to imagine these like golden shears or scissors that just go around and snip all those little strands. I remember after teaching this retreat and having a lot of really close contact with these people and feeling a lot of being really affected by them. Every time that person's come up, I imagine myself just gently snipping that sense of tether. Right. So the visualization is learning to kind of let go of that way we get really caught, because clinging enmeshment, becoming boundary, you know, without boundaries. All those things are part of the lack of boundaries arising. Learning to, when you're talking to someone or experiencing something, we feel I'm at tolerance, I can't hold anymore, to learn to take a break, to say, okay, consciously I need to disengage and say, okay, I'll come back in an hour or a day. I need a little time to kind of find my feet, to ground again. Learning to make a conscious and not unconscious. Doing things like if you realize, okay, I'm going to meet with someone in the future that usually have trouble with my boundaries around. Like let's say Thanksgiving time or some holidays or some meeting with someone. You can maybe role play and talk with a friend so you can see, this is what I always do, and notice how maybe do that exercise of this is me and this is you. So you really highlight that sense of how your boundaries actually show up. So play with them. And finding a quality of centeredness, of groundedness, you know, feeling your feet. Like Qigong, I often teach it from a quality of really noticing your center, this area just below your navel, which is part of like Japanese culture and also Japanese martial arts. So there's a place of focusing right here, just below your navel, called the hara. In Zen, one style just focuses on your breath, just going right there, letting your attention rest right there. And as you do that, that brings a quality of collectedness, a quality of centeredness, of groundedness. And then letting yourself, you know, get out of the way. I'll give you a secret that I do. I learned from Rodney, but I think he learned from Joseph. That when you're giving an interview, when I'm talking with another person, instead of sitting square to them, if you notice, I'm always just a little off, and my chair is just a little off center, and that allows me to kind of let the energy go by me, so I'm not like being absorbed. Because some of you talk about some very sensitive stuff, some very tender stuff in the interviews, which is part of the privilege of being a teacher. But also I have to hold my own sense of balance itself, so I don't become overwhelmed. I don't become burdened by that. Have my quality of boundaries so I can meet, be connected, but also not become burdened by what is being said. So boundaries. So final thing I want to say, I think one of the quickest ways to start to establish your own sense of boundaries is to work on the more subtle levels of it. Okay, what I mean by that is when you're actually face to face and actually talking with someone, you know, the stakes are much higher. There's already, you know, already kind of bumping up against each other. You're always kind of testing where the boundaries are. But start to work out in this level, going from the Dhammapada, where the Buddha says all phenomena are preceded by the mind, by the heart, ruled by the heart, made by the heart. So there's a sense of the way your mind goes, everything else follows that. So start to notice when you're not interacting with someone, notice that quality of integrity, that quality of wholeness, noticing where you tend to lean into something. You know, okay, I see that person attractive, so I kind of let my eyes rest on them and my energy goes out that way. Or maybe I'm feeling afraid of someone and I draw back. Start to notice that when you're actually not interacting with that other person, but you start to feel where your energy goes. You know, practicing when no one knows whether you're following boundaries or not. Start to feel that quality of, okay, this is where I'm starting to lose that centeredness. And it's literally like if I was doing a workshop, I'll have everyone stand up and feel that sense of being balanced and have you lean one direction till you start to lose your balance. So you physically felt that imbalance and then going the other direction. And then finding, okay, where's that place where I can be balanced on my own two feet? So you can do the same thing with your intention, with your mind, with your thoughts. to notice when you start to go out in a way that unbalances you. Yeah, balance and boundaries, I think, are very related. Noticing when you start to withdraw and push away. Okay, where can I find that quality of wholeness, of integrity? And the more you learn that internally, then it naturally starts to show up in your life. You certainly start to recognize, okay, it's always surprising when you start to recognize how easily you let boundaries go. Once you get a taste of what it feels like to have good boundaries, oh, wow, I really let that go. You just learn from it. You meet with interest, with curiosity. Notice when you push out into someone else's space, learning to step back, let them have their own space, give them a chance to rise up. So in this way, we start to actually meet really in a very sweet way, in a very respectful way. And you can see where that dance goes. Sometimes you move this way, some that way. There's a sense of integrity, a sense of wholeness that's underlying everything. All right, let's just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle. All right, before we open to your questions or your comments, I'd like to hear, I've been talking a lot, hear what you have to say and explore. I'd like to talk about the homework for this week. And so, Dara, if you could post that for the online people, and hopefully you got a copy of it. I may not have brought quite enough copies, but does everyone have a copy who wanted one? Yeah? All right, so boundaries in Dharma and daily life. So as we're exploring boundaries this month, start by holding it in the quality of healthy boundaries, of establishing those boundaries. You know, what does that actually feel like? Maybe reflecting on people you know in your life who seem to have a good sense of boundaries that feel like they're appropriate, they're helpful, they're respectful, they're not intrusive, and start to learn, maybe use that as a model. Getting a sense of where you end and another person begins. You know, where's that edge? Because sometimes it's not so clear where that is. Again, we're not going into the formless and the emptiness nature of us, but more that form nature. I want us to really understand that there is the real relative reality of self and other. Exploring the healthy and appropriate boundaries around your mind, your body, your emotions, and your energy. Maybe one of these has a bigger edge for you than another one. Highlighting that. Again, all this is about being curious. You know, the more we can see clearly without judgment, the more we learn from it. We learn, and that learning transforms us. And start to reflect, you naturally see, as you get a sense of what healthy boundaries are, you start to see where your own boundaries might be a little shrunken or a little bit dented or a little bit out of balance. Reflect on what conditioning you bring to your boundaries. Conditioning is like what's the training? What's, like, for example, what did your parents teach you about boundaries? How does that affect you now? Reflect on how your relationship to boundaries shapes your Dharma practice. Right, so next week we'll have a chance to discuss this and unpack it and explore it. And your engagement over this next week will make a lot of interesting conversation and exploration that will benefit everyone. All right, so let's open to any questions or sharing there might be here in the room or online. Yeah, come up, Austin. You mind if we put the mic, we can put the camera on you here. So outlining people can see you better.
Figured I'd break the silence instead of Carlito. Two quick things. One is that a few years ago, maybe 4 years ago, I was at a conference, and it was a conference of, you know, very progressive people, social justice types, and, you know, we can get pretty militant about boundaries. So I hugged a friend of mine, and then I said to the other person, "Can I hug you?" And it was just a kind of knee-jerk reaction. I just reached to hug the person, and they were, "See, you know, you asked me and you did it anyway before I could respond." Well, the reason I raise that is if you think about COVID, it was kind of a reset of boundaries.
Oh, yeah.
Where now I don't hug anybody. And I'm always kind of assessing, is it a elbow, a fist bump? Can I hug you?
Yeah,
can
right, right.
I feel like it's been in that way healthy. I've lost family members. It's not a beautiful thing, the pandemic, but I feel like part of it is we're more aware as collectively and individually of our boundaries. And then the second thing was, I just observe the magic of awkwardness in my life. I discovered awkwardness maybe like 2 or 3 years ago. It's this sensation in the body. It'll happen sometimes when I'm talking too long in a conversation with somebody and I want to pull away, they want to pull away, and it's really awkward, you know, or some situations. And I've just learned, I've been practicing with, when I feel that sensation, to kind of widen my stance and kind of be with it in a weird way.
Yes.
It gives me this enormous power to like have the conversation, go to the room, ask the question. You know, there's a freedom in that awkwardness. And listening, you talk about boundaries, I almost feel like maybe part of that sensation is like pressing against the boundaries, both, you know, constructed boundaries, socially constructed, and then the ones that are really manifest in my soma. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Austin. All right. Let me turn back. All right. We all able to hear online? All right. Good. 2 days in a row. Thank you. Thank you, Austin. Yeah. So there's some nice comments around, you know, one of it is just that, you know, the kind of, we don't all have a sense of what's appropriate boundaries. I mean, you know, even what's healthy within one culture, one community, one family of origin may not be the same with someone else. I remember doing these exercises with, again, with boundaries, is you start, you know, start with two people across the room, and you start to, one person walks slowly to the other person. The other person says, "Okay, stop." And it's often they're tuning into that somatic feeling of, okay, I want to register. I want to feel a little bit of, you know, a little too close, and then something softens you, you get closer, and you just get closer and closer. Sometimes you walk right up to the person and there's no stop. Sometimes there's all these like 20 stops on the way to get closer. So it is, and how COVID has kind of reset our sense of closeness. I remember going, especially with social distancing, and going into a place where there's not, you're like, wait, we're all too close. And we have really reset it. And it's just that curiosity of what is really being alive for it, you know, learning, okay, this is what I feel like, and how do you want to be? And then also talking about I like how you said the magic of awkwardness. And that's like we talked about all last week, is that in last month, I should say, that internal monitoring of what's going on. And sometimes there is that awkwardness. And it's like, often if we're not conscious of it, we do kind of just, okay, I'm going to see you later. We just kind of break. But if we're willing, as you said, to, okay, I'm going to ground here and kind of in some ways recommit to being present, that awkwardness can actually open a gate to something that needs to be said, like be addressed to the whole room. Or maybe it's a time for this conversation to go deeper. Or maybe there is a sense of boundaries, and you're pushing up against that. And it's really a nice way of articulating that sensitivity that the Dharma practice, you know, really integrates nicely into whatever you do. So thanks for sharing that, Austin. All right, how about someone online? And probably the easiest for me to see is if you raised your virtual hand, but you could also unmute. Do they have the power to unmute, I hope? All right. I'm not seeing any hands. Oh, Iris, go ahead.
Thank you. I like the idea of thinking about the psychological boundaries and trying to understand them. And like, I totally agree around they come from our, you know, our conditioning, our family of origin kind of conditioning. And then, I personally sort of struggle a lot with boundaries, mostly psychological rather than physical. And then we get to use our Dharma practice to manage whatever arises, whether it's discomfort or hurt feelings or, feeling like, oh man, I really blew it. So that kind of combination of the psychological boundaries and then using our practice to work with the difficulties arising from those boundary difficulties.
Yeah, thank you, Iris. Yeah, I think it's so helpful to not try to be perfect, because if we try to wait till we're perfect and say the right thing, you know, we're going to be paralyzed. It's much better to, you know, engage and relate to that person, dance with them. And you know, like as Austin was saying, you have that inner sensitivity. You're monitoring what's going on internally. And you realize you dance with what's arising. Because you could have the perfect thing to say, but it's not perfect in that moment. You know, the moment, it's like it reveals itself. What's arising right here, right now. We just had these memorized pat phrases. There wouldn't be any connection. And then you trust that, okay, you trust more and more your capacity to repair, to work with, to own up to what you said. And okay, let me hear how I put my foot in my mouth, how that was hurtful. Let me hear that. And the other person, I mean, if you're able to really hear them, that's quite a gift. And like, oh, wow. And we start to, you know, allow ourselves to, it's like that sense of, it's like one teacher described it, that he said the most vital thing as a spiritual practitioner is to transcend being human. The other most vital thing is to be fully human. You know, and so those two things, like we're holding the emptiness, the reality of emptiness, of non-self, and we're also holding all the messiness, all the nuances, all the beauty of being individual people. And we're meeting each other and we're rubbing up against each other or stepping on each other's toes. We're rubbing each other's shoulders. There's all this stuff that's happening. And we just learn to move with it and dance with it. So thank you, Iris. All right. So before we go to Ariel, let me see if there's anyone here in person like to share anything. Yes, go on, Carlito.
This one perhaps is a little bit esoteric, but I have a delayed kind of response. So, or often I do. So I'll meet with a friend or stepmom or something like that. And it's not until the next day or maybe even the following day that like I'm sitting and it's something got dumped into me. That's like, it's in my muscles. And when I start to relax, it all comes up and it's, and the causality isn't super clear all the time either. It's like, where is this coming from? And then I've got an intuition. It's like, it feels like I picked something up, you know, from a very energetic way. And so, Ajahn, somebody, I can't remember the, was answering a similar question in a recorded session. And his suggestion was actually to like focus on something physical, like your feet or something during the exchange. But then it's not clear at the time that an exchange is occurring. Because
it's when you should be grounded for, yeah.
Right, right. So I was just wondering if you had any suggestions around that one. That one's a little weird, but
yeah, sure. All right, let me come back here so that. Okay, could you hear that question online? Okay, good. Even the Colito test. Just teasing it out. So the sense of kind of the kind of post-action reviews, like you know, you realize, oh wow, that really wasn't. I felt like that wasn't. I feel yucky from that interaction, or feel something residual from that. I may not realize it for a few days later. You know, so it is in the past, but yet it's coming up here in the present, right? So right there, okay, let me meet that. And I think it's very helpful to meet it that way and say, okay, let me, because in some ways it's happening right now, because the residual is that's the power that's still moving through your body, your mind, your energy system. So what I like to do is say, okay, let me just first see if I can turn my attention to it, you know, in a non-judgmental way, in a quiet kind of calm way. And really unpack that whole experience. So there's the physical expression, there's the mental, there's also the deeper beliefs around it. And so it's important I think it's very helpful to see all of that, okay, and see how it, oh, that ties into past childhood, all that stuff, that if it's available. But try to do mostly in the body as you're doing it. The body keeps you really grounded in the present moment. So it's, for me, it's almost like, okay, I'm feeling that tension in the chest, I'm feeling that belief. Excuse me, feeling the tickle in my throat. And then something shifts and I feel a deeper current that I wasn't so aware of. So that way you start to see that. And that way it starts to, the part that was like in the middle of that conversation, there's a way that you were maybe not fully present, fully conscious, or maybe there's a little bit of being disassociated. There's different ways that I know for myself. That arises.
And then that allows for things to sneak in.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Got it.
Yeah, like the Ajahn was saying, that when you know this is going to be a difficult conversation, because every time I have a conversation with this person, I get hooked. Okay, I'm going to really feel my feet. That's great advice. But like you said, sometimes you don't realize it until afterwards. But by going through it and seeing, okay, that's what triggered me. That's what established this sense of self, this painful sense of self in a particular way, you start to become more conscious of. So then you start to find that you catch it sooner. Maybe you catch it in a day, or maybe you catch it in an hour. And then you start to be, you know, like going back to not to keep picking on Austin, but that sense of feeling that sense of awkwardness, you start to feel it right in the moment. And you start to realize, oh, let me readjust. Let me ground. Let me be present. So then you're meeting it. You become closer and closer to it. And you probably find that there'd be some people you're able to do that more easily. Some people, it's always going to be a delayed, at least for a while. But I think by always noticing it, you kind of start to trace through those pathways. Because luckily, we only have a limited number of pathways that get triggered. It may seem like they're endless, but we usually have a repertoire of maybe 15 or 20 or something. We start to get to really know those. We become really sensitive to those. It's like, oh, they just said that, and I felt that hit me here. And in the middle, then you start to be able to, middle of the conversation, pause, you know, maybe just, you just slow down a little bit, take a couple breaths, and see if you can respond.
So
does it help?
Grounding, yeah. In a nutshell,
yes. Yeah, grounding. Yeah, grounding, but also realizing that when something's said, if it's painful and it touches a painful part of us, we may disassociate, we may disconnect. And then we lose contact with that ground, and realize that's part of our conditioning.
Yeah. Well, that's helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. So looks like Ariel. Am I saying your name right?
Ariel. Pretty close.
Ariel.
Thanks. I think you addressed this a little in your answer to this last question. And this sort of comes from like thinking about that, the parallel that you drew between like, you know, the idea of like needing to have a sense of self before coming closer to realizing a non-self, and the needing to have a healthy sense of boundaries. So in order to better realize kind of like the belief that there is a separation in the first place, I'm kind of wondering about like the skillfulness of a boundary. Like, I imagine that a lot of boundaries arise from our like clinging to a skanda, like too strongly identifying with like an aggregate that's arising, and so we experience the feeling of a like a limit to our comfort, and say, oh, there's a boundary. But at the same time, like, how can you also be aware of whether the boundaries that you're experiencing are coming from a place of right everything, and you're not sort of misidentifying or clinging to something that is arising, and that is actually the precursor to the boundary. That was very like long-winded, but I'm basically asking about like, how do you check the skillfulness and the wholesomeness and the rightness of boundaries?
All right, thank you. Yeah, so to explore that a little bit. Yeah, so it's a great question. And I think it's just really a vital question as we explore boundaries in this way. You know, how do we feel if it's appropriate and skillful, or is it coming from, because it can come equally from an unskillful place. It can come from a, as you said, identificated place, a place of defending, a great sense of trying to protect. And so just answering that from my own experience, there's often, when I have an appropriate boundary, it's, and on one hand, it feels very clear, very I'm very sure of it. There's no wavering around it. But at the same time, it's also very pliable. It's very flexible. So it can feel very strong, like there's wavering. The unwaveringness gives a quality of strength, but there's also this quality of integrity. But probably more importantly, there's also the quality of emptiness behind it. There's a sense of like, okay, this is just mutual respect. This is mutual connection. But there's not a sense of me having to really establish that. When the boundary is not so clear, that sense of me is really active. And you can also have that, it's reflected internally by, you know, we have probably all experienced that. Okay, I've just got to tell that person, I'm going to draw the line. And we can just talk for on and on about how we want to establish the boundaries. And we don't realize that really we're so caught in, we're really engaged in that pain body, that tenderness, that constriction around our own, you know, identification. So again, that's sometimes the best we can do. Sometimes we're trying to learn healthy boundaries. We have to go through that awkward quality, that sense of being unskillful and you know, not doing it perfectly, to realize, you know, I've never had boundaries in this area. I've never developed boundaries in this area. So I have to learn how to find my way. And I'm going to sometimes overcompensate. I'm going to be, you know, not quite perfect. And we start to learn that. We kind of go back and forth. And so I think that's probably the biggest thing, is that internal sense that when it's a clear boundary, it just, yeah, I don't have a lot to say about it. It's like, are you going to respect the boundary or not? If you're not going to respect it, then, you know, I'm going to leave, or I'm not going to stay in relationship in that moment with that, or I'm going to make adjustments. But there's a sense of internal spaciousness, emptiness, and also adaptability, that I can adapt to whatever the feedback is from that other person. Because sometimes that boundary maybe isn't the right fit for that, the way you've expressed it, so you can shift it. While the other hand, it's much the other way, when it's not so skillful, it's much more rigid. And it's much more, there's just, the selfing is just right there. we may not be able to see it as well because we're so busy selfing, we don't realize that we're selfing so much. But, you know, we definitely have a lot of opinions that we believe in around it. Does that help?
Yeah, that was great. And I'm also going to use selfing as a verb from now on.
Yes, it's a great process, the process of selfing.